Haven't you heard about what God said to Moses in the passage about the burning bush? He said, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, God is the God of the living and not of the dead. If you translate it that way, God is the God of the living and not of the dead, it means that God is there for you while you're alive, but when you die, forget it. It's not the message that Jesus was trying to get across, is it? What Jesus was saying is that the dead are in some sense alive. And in order to get that notion across in Kukele, you have to say something like, God is the God of the living and the dead. Nobody's going to start screaming? I thought I might get a reaction from that one. I just wanted to drop this notion, this passage about the burning bush. These people didn't know English, and we were working from English text. I worked from the Greek, and I tried to make them understand what it meant, but there were some times when I was not able to be there. They did translation on their own from English. And it says in the TEV, have you not heard of the passage about the burning bush? Well, bush got translated with, you know, what's out there, like in the bush. And passage got translated road, because that's what a passage is outside. You know, it's a road. And the road around the burning bush, and burning bush was a comfortable concept. They burn the bush every year. They didn't know what it meant. But there it was. You know, white man is something else. Well, I could, I suppose, belabor you for a long time with stuff like this. But what really is the point of it all? The point of it is this. That to go into an area like this and do this kind of mission work requires the very best that the church has to offer. And I think that that very best right now is probably in this room. I'm going to stop jabbering now, and what we do in English, we entertain questions, don't we? So I'll entertain some questions. Language is a marvelous thing.
Does that mean that you can be questioned?
I don't know what it means. I don't know why people entertain questions, but they do. Yes?
I don't know much about the history of missions in the Lutheran Church. I know that
I don't either, but go ahead.
Oftentimes we've had problems. That mission work is always defined to us in terms of our clergy going out into the mission field.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I really appreciate your strong, emphatic statement to be, you know, very well qualified. But yet, how then do we break the mentality that mission work is the job of the entire church? For example, there are some very well-run, and then also some very not well-run organizations within some other church bodies that send out, after 2 years of college, a support team to work with their missionaries, students who are going into any wide variety number of careers later on. But they want to give a few years of service to full-time mission work, whether it be overseas, whether it be in the United States, wherever. But at any rate, it's developing the mentality that everyone's job is mission work. Now, how can we move as a church to further develop that mentality?
I would think in two ways. I know that where I worked, I insisted that we have a rather extensive team. I was there, and I was responsible for the original analysis of the language and the formation of a translation team and early training of evangelists. But when the work of analysis was, linguistic analysis was rather far advanced, we got a young man whose name I mentioned, Mr. Ruprecht, who was a teacher. And we sent him to the University of Michigan, where he was trained in primer production and adult literacy. And we got a doctor who started a public health program. And we got an agriculturalist who studied the agricultural problems that they had. And then we started a program also of production of evangelical materials by another pastor. And then we had about 40 miles away what was our support structure, where we had an automobile mechanic and general troubleshooter who, I mean, after all, it was a problem. If your car broke down and you couldn't fix it, it didn't get fixed. And so we required, where I was, a pretty wide range of talent. But I have to say this, it was recruited specifically. In other words, we didn't have anybody who wanted to, quote, give a couple of years. And the reason that we didn't, we could have used people like that, but the reason that we didn't is that the Nigerian government wouldn't give them a visa. If you're going to Nigeria to work, you're going to have to demonstrate that you have skills or training that's not available from the local people. Otherwise, they won't let you in because they say you're putting one of our people out of work. The problem that you mentioned is really a very difficult problem, and it's getting worse simply because of government regulations. We could have used people like that, but in one sense, but in another sense, we couldn't use them because we couldn't get them in the country. And it gets pretty specific. I remember we needed a professor in geography at a teacher's college. And we got a man over there who had a PhD in economic geography. I don't know if that's the right name for it, but I think that was what it was, economic geography. This guy was a highly trained, very intelligent person. So he went to work at this teacher's college. Well, the Nigerian government finally got around to his credentials with regard to the school, because they were subsidizing the school, and they said, hey, we're not going to subsidize this guy because we have a surplus of economic geographers who are native Nigerians, so we're not going to pay a foreigner to teach that. He can stay here and teach it, but we're not going to pay him anything. Well, that's just a sort of an example of what's going on. If you are a nurse, for instance, and all you've got is an RN, you're not going to get into West Africa. You need at least a master's in public health or something like that. And if all you can do is preach, you're not going to get to Nigeria either, because they seem to think they have enough preachers. I was able to live and work there for a long time because of my linguistic credentials. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Likewise,
Yeah, that would be very nice, but what happens is, well, what would happen? I could show you my file of volunteers. If we directed our mission work to use everybody who applied, we would have a very strange missionary force. We'd have, you know, we'd have a whole bunch of art teachers. Now, I don't know why art teachers are all interested in going overseas, but I have at least a dozen art teachers who want to go overseas. I'm sorry, I can't do it. Art is so culturally focused. Okay, I'm coming. I'm not finished yet. That they're just. I don't know what to say except I'm sorry. I can't use an art teacher. Then we have in the arts we have a number of plumbers. Plumbers and electricians, not many general contractors, but a lot of plumbers and electricians. That's the way it goes. And just because somebody volunteers and says, I'm willing to go overseas, that doesn't mean, and I don't think we should, manufacture a place for it. That's going about, that's what I call anti-planning. And that also then undermines our partner church relationship. You see, most of our overseas effort is done in conjunction with a partner church. In other words, we talk to them about their needs, and they talk about their needs, and we decide on what they decide, really, what kind of people they want, and we try to find that kind of people. I really do not want to discourage anyone, and I really wish that we could use every volunteer. But the kind of people that we need and are going to need more of in the future are pretty specific, because we are required to select specific kinds of people with specific training for specific tasks. The general, I suppose you could call it a general missionary, is really kind of a thing of the past.
Yeah. It looks to me that the prerequisites then for, especially for a foreign missionary, is someone who has had in some field other than theology graduate work before or after seminary, and can somehow tie in that study, like linguistics, into his mission work. And I wonder, that seems to be. Intellectualized. I mean, you don't really need. I'm sure there must be something for missionary work besides.
Oh, there is, certainly. You know, I don't mean to communicate that at all. I think that the most important thing, qualification a missionary has, is his understanding of the gospel and his ability to communicate the gospel. But what I'm trying to say is that communication of the gospel is a pretty complicated thing. And any help he can get to make him aware of what he's facing is really quite important. No, I don't mean to say that's the most important qualification. But the thing is that these foreign governments are putting restrictions on us as a church body that individuals don't have. In other words, a person can go overseas individual on his own behalf as a visitor and do things that we as a church body simply would not be permitted to do, and if we tried to do it, we'd get kicked out. It's a fact of life. Not a very pleasant one, but yeah.
Do you think the church will in the future, to help seminarians or graduating from seminary to get that extra training for those fields?
I hope so.
Because, you know, finances. I mean,
sure.
Can barely make it through seminary.
I think that I know that at least one section of it, for instance, the Forward in Remembrance has a specific section devoted in the mission. I don't know if you've seen the procedures on that, but to Bible translation. We can get money from Forward in Remembrance to train people in anthropology and linguistics at the moment. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
In other words, can they relate to the customs and you have a feel for it?
Well, South Africa.
The other nations of the family.
South Africa is isolated. If you want to get thrown out of Africa and you're not in South Africa, you give out some good vibes about South Africa and you've had it. And you see what is happening in South Africa discredits Christianity. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Wondering, you said that a specialized area would be necessary to get into a foreign mission in the future, perhaps. What specific areas are you thinking about? And the second question, you mentioned the difficulty breaking into a new culture, what is being done to help new missionaries going over there break into a new society, and so that they aren't discredited from the word go?
That is a very good question, and at the present, when we faced with sending a missionary to a situation like that, we have to send him to places outside the church to get some kind of introductory training, you know, like Fuller, or there are a number of mission institutes around. We've mainly used Fuller. We had a sort of a mission training thing during the summer, and last summer I tried to give tried to equip the missionaries going over with the basic equipment that would allow them to break into the language and culture. I don't know whether we succeeded or not, but we tried. And what your other question was, what areas?
Specifically, you were mentioning that you can't get into some foreign countries without a specific specialization outside of being able to preach.
India, for instance. You cannot get a residence visa in India if you are only a preacher.
What other types of, what additional training would...
In India, it would be great if you had something like a DVM, a doctor of veterinary medicine, in addition to your... they need veterinarians. No, I'm not joking.
See where it would make sense if you were in the country. But that's one. Are there some that
In Nigeria, we hope to get a number of people. And you know, Nigeria is really something else. In the good old days, we thought they had 285 languages. We now know for certain that they have more than 450. And I personally added 5 to that list simply by walking around my house. So you have this enormous, I'm sure the Tower of Babel was somewhere in West Africa. It's got to be. There are a lot of fairly large tribal groups whose language is still unwritten. And we want to get in there and do something about it. And at the moment, at least, if we have somebody with an MA in linguistics, we can get him into Nigeria. Right. Yes, sir. That's correct. I just recruited a doctor of veterinary medicine who is going to Liberia. He also happens to be a graduate of Concordia Seminary.
Oh, really?
And I was wondering, what is the best route? I'm in seminary now. I have any formal education in linguistics. You go through like these 2 summer courses, but you know, LBP, and so is it better to go on and get a master's in linguistics? Or what's required of that? What's the best thing?
Liberia, you would not have to do that. You can go in if you're a graduate of Concordia Seminary, you can get into Liberia as an evangelical missionary. Now that could change, but that's the way it is right now. We're sending a team over there. One is Robert, a young man who's a candidate, graduated from Fort Wayne, and the other member of the team is this graduate of Concordia Seminary here of a number of years ago who now has become a doctor of veterinary medicine. And he did that, by the way. He did that because of his assessment of the requirements of the mission field. In other words, he studied the mission field and tried to find how he could make himself more useful as an evangelical missionary. And he decided on public health and veterinary medicine. He has an MA in public health, a doctor of veterinary medicine. His wife is a registered nurse, and she has an MA in public health. It's a very remarkable family, and we really expect great things from them.
Without belittling that, the importance of that, and without trying to get away from the necessity of constantly working to assimilate yourself to the culture and language and customs of the people you're among, how would you also give proper emphasis to the power of the gospel itself, which is a power beyond our own understanding of the culture and beyond our own weaknesses?
That's something I didn't mention. I should. I had it in my mind to do that. We have something going for us that they don't. And that's the power of the gospel. But if something blocks the gospel or distorts it, it's no longer the gospel.
How many of you know Maury Watkins? Maury was, I was telling Maury that these languages, you know, they're tone languages. You've got to learn to handle the tone or you distort it. Oh, he said, that's not important. They understand me. I said, all right, here's a Yala man, and you claim to speak Yala. I want you to recite the Lord's Prayer. So he said, in Yala, the introduction, Our Father who art in heaven. And I said, okay, stop right there. And he used the English sentence intonation on it. And I asked this Yala man, what did he say? Well, he said, Our Father is on the farm. That, you know, when that happens, what comes out cannot be described as the gospel.
I have devoted my life to most of my work, I should say, to try to get the gospel to people with whom I live. And I really study what kind of message came through. And it is unbelievable how the gospel can be turned into law just by one little word. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son.
And they translated, God respected the world. Think of the implications of that. You know, love and respect are very close. They have a lot of the same components of meaning. Anyway. Yes, sir. Yeah, that's oh, okay. Yeah, they see, that's constantly changing. And we do a lot of people write in and say, send me a list of the jobs available. And what they're after is that they're going to look them over, and whatever suits them the best, they'll pick it, and then you send them. And we try to discourage that.
I was thinking more along the lines of choosing people from our congregation to encourage them.
Oh, yeah. We've started putting our most urgent needs in a little announcement in the Reporter and the Lutheran Witness. And we've got pretty good response from that. I've got at least six people who want to go to New Guinea as a business manager, and that's great, because we have other business managers' positions coming up in other places soon, and maybe we can use them all. If you will write to me, or give me your name and address, I can have my secretary inform you of most of our needs, you know, are from partner churches who have made requests for specific kinds of people.
I'm looking down the road several years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just Board for Mission Services and somebody will open it and give it to whomever. Yes, sir.
I have a couple ideas now. The first one is a comment that isn't it true that the rate of Christian converts in Africa exceeds that of the birth rate?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Isn't that an indication that Africa itself will be providing the mission workers needed in that time?
The conversion of Africa at this time is a lay movement. It's the laymen that are spreading the church. And if the church is really going to grow, that's where it's got to come from. I'm convinced that our job, both here in America and overseas, is to give people the resources so that they can build a church.
Synod do to make will that be emphasized more in the coming years, do you think?
I hope so. There are rather significant numbers of churches in the Missouri Synod who think that mission work shouldn't be done. I had an experience in California. Chairman of the congregation called me up and said their pastor was going on vacation. Would I come and preach on Sunday? So I said, sure. And he said, by the way, we have Sunday school first. We have Sunday school, and then we have only one service. And if you could bring along something for Sunday school. Well, I had made a little film, a little 8mm film, and that I'll show to children because they're interested in it, you know, and they like to see pictures. And so I showed this film, and lo and behold, the pastor was there. And after I showed this film, the pastor came up to me and introduced himself and said, well, I'm here this morning, so you won't have to preach. You can just go. And the president of the congregation told me later that he had been trying to get something going in the congregation, an awareness of missions and what was going on. But the pastor was afraid that if people got interested in overseas missions, it would hurt their local effort in some way. I don't know how that would work. But and that's not an isolated case. Yes, sir. That's right, and we have a classical example at in Akajuk. There was a Swiss couple who wanted to give 4 years to the Lord, and they decided to produce a New Testament in 4 years. Well, they came in, and they got a couple of kids, and they started cranking out the New Testament. And when the New Testament was dedicated, now, there were 35 people at the dedication, 28 of which were expatriate missionaries. When the Kukeli New Testament was dedicated, which took me 15 years to produce, there were more than 2,500 people at the dedication. It's how you do it. And I really must say to my sorrow that there's a lot of so-called translation work going on that's nothing of the sort. It cannot be called, I know a chap who translated the entire Bible, spent 20 years on it. And when Dr. Eugene Nida examined him, we were at a Bible Translators Institute, and we had to defend translations that we had done. He got this huge type manuscript, and it was about this thick. And he said, I see something written here. What does it say? And he said, well, it says literally the old law. And Dr. Nida said, well, that's interesting. And he flipped over to the New Testament, and he said, oh, I see you have one of the same words. He said, oh, yes, the New Testament is the new law. So Dr. Nida said, well, let's flip over here to Romans. And how do you translate justify? Oh, we translated justify with the phrase, you walk a straight line and God calls you good. I wonder if there was any gospel in that entire Bible. Let me just ask a question. Of all the books in the New Testament, which one do you think is the easiest to translate? Any opinions? Nope.
Maybe John.
Nope. John is one of the most difficult. Philemon has got some cultural things in it that are pretty naughty. It's James. And it's James because James is all law and everybody understands the law. And I can tell you, a person who is not a real Christian, that is to say, does not understand the gospel, is totally incapable of translating it. Because he will always do something to turn it into law. Like this, you walk a straight line and God calls you good for justify. That's pure law. The problem of translation is, the thing about translation is the more you know, the harder it gets. If you really have only an elementary knowledge of the language and the culture, then it's not too bad. But when you start finding out what you're really saying, then it becomes more and more difficult.
So yes, sir. One more question.
Yes.
Is the church trying to make an end for all in developing a center for mission training?
No. I shouldn't really answer it that abruptly. As I read it, the Missouri Synod is going to, and particularly the Board for Higher Education, is going to have to think through the entire philosophy and approach to training church workers. And I'm going to try to contribute to that, but at the moment, the positions are pretty well set in concrete. You've opened up a whole can of worms there, and I don't really want to dump it out this time.
Thank you. I think you folks like to eat, for lunch time is ready. So now I'd like to remind you, if I may, and encourage you to take this chance this afternoon to come to him and then maybe raise some questions and also discuss your personal interests and problems, etc. You know, here. I think this is a good place.
Here, after lunch.
After lunch, sometime in the afternoon. Mission executives at downtown 500 are not so easily available. If you go down there, you have to take the lines and then wait and so forth. But here, the consultation costs nothing. Actually, he will give you free consultation. So please come. If I may, I'd like to put one footnote that, as Pastor Fajan mentioned, nowadays each partner church or churches, they are making their needs and so forth. If you are interested in certain area, it may be a good idea to focus on that area. Certain country may need medical doctors so much, while other countries don't need medical doctors. I know Japan, Korea, for instance, we export, our medical doctors. But doesn't mean that we don't have the needs. We have different kinds of needs. Now, therefore, it may be a good idea and more meaningful to you to focus your own interest on Nigeria or Korea or India or wherever you like to go or you are interested. But anyway, this is just a clue, instead of talking about in general terms. But we appreciate very much your presentation this morning and also your insights. I hope you come back in the future and then also have good counsel, counseling with our students. So let us give him a hand.